Morning and welcome to the Fourth Circuit. We're prepared to hear argument on our first case, 12-4775, the United States versus Kerr. Mr. Crump, we'll be glad to hear from you. Mr. Crump, before you begin, let me just suggest that the supplemental briefing that we had the parties do may have led you all down some rabbit trails we don't necessarily need to go down, which is our fault, not yours. So you might begin with directly addressing the Simmons factors, the application of Simmons by reason of the offense level, the criminal history, and whether there are findings of aggregation, the exact test that was set out in Simmons. Because depending upon the resolution of that question, the other items on the mandate and ineffective assistance of counsel and whatnot might not be quite as important. So I didn't want you all to use all your time on that and skip over the main meat, so to speak.
Thank you, Your Honor, and good morning to this honorable court. Norman Carr contends that for federal criminal law purposes, under the North Carolina Structured Sentencing Act, a sentence which is imposed for a particular offense, for a particular prior record level, in the mitigated range of punishment, is for an offense which is different than an offense in the aggravated range of punishment or the presumptive range of punishment. And the core of Norman Kerr's argument is that he could not have been sentenced before he was convicted, that 18922G1 prescribes a conviction for a crime punishable by more than 1 year. He could not have been sentenced in North Carolina before he was convicted, and he could not have been convicted before the Honorable State District Court Judge found the sentencing range. Obviously, she had to find the offense class, the prior record level, but she had also to find the range of punishment before he was convicted. Once he was convicted, then his exposure began. And an analogy that Norman Carr might make a little bit different would be to our federal system. Rule 11 colloquy, and the defendant stands in front of the district court judge and goes through a lengthy 20-30 minute colloquy. The judge finds that the plea is freely and voluntarily made, accepts the plea. Then there's a factual basis, and there's a deficiency in the factual basis, and sentence is deferred, or acceptance of the plea is deferred to the acceptance of the factual basis. In that federal case, the defendant hadn't been convicted. Even though his plea is freely and voluntarily made, he hasn't been convicted until that judge finds their factual basis to support his plea.
Well, in Simmons, the court said that resolving the question of the applicability of the range of punishment for the actual defendant, not a hypothetical defendant, actual defendant, requires the examination of three pieces of evidence: the offense class, the prior record level, and the applicability of the aggravated sentencing range. And I don't think any of those are at issue in this case. Is that correct?
There is an issue, Your Honor. The issue is what is meant by that footnote 9 by aggravated sentencing range. Norman Carr contends
aggravated wouldn't mean mitigated, was it?
We would contend that it does mean mitigated. That the word aggravated means, is it the presumptive range of punishment? Is it the mitigated range of punishment? Or is there aggravated? In other words, that range of, when you say aggravated range of punishment, there has to be a deference to the state judge to make a determination as to the level of aggravation. So there are three factors: the offense, the prior record, criminal history, and then the level, the sentence and range. And that would be when the court says aggravated sentence and range. If the court just took that literal and not in the spirit of the law, then that would eliminate the presumptive range, and you just go with Pruitt.
Well, the footnote actually says the applicability of the aggravated sentencing range. And I guess you're saying that whether or not that sentencing range applies is for the judge to decide.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Well, but with respect to aggravation, anyway, as to the factors in North Carolina, most all of those factors are now for a jury to decide in the first instance. And then the judge decides whether or not there are mitigating circumstances, and then weighs those circumstances in deciding whether or not to impose a mitigated sentence. But all of that is in the judge's discretion. And we're no longer, in this case, in my mind anyway, dealing with a theoretical defendant, because we have a defendant that, in fact, is subject to a sentence in excess of 1 year if the judge, in his discretion, decides to impose it. So what does Simmons have to do with this case?
Well, Simmons says, it says that this is a legislative mandate. It's not a guideline system. And they're for each felony offense, there are 18 offenses. So in this particular case, for Florence break and entering, class H, prior level 4, there would be three separate offenses.
Well, three separate ranges of punishment for the same offense. I'm not sure I buy that they're three separate offenses. The defendant has been convicted of an offense. The question is, where in that table is the judge ultimately going to land? And it seems to me that if the judge has discretion to decide whether or not to impose a sentence in excess of 1 year, then we are no longer dealing with a theoretical worst case scenario defendant that Simmons was talking about.
Your Honor, the judge does not have, we respectfully take issue that the judge's discretion, the judge has discretion as to the punishment range. But once the judge exercises that discretion and finds that the factors in mitigation outweigh the factors in aggravation, and that the mitigated range of punishment is appropriate, then that judge's discretion has been circumscribed by the legislature, and she can't give more than 11 months.
Let me ask you this. I suppose that's a rule we could, a holding we could impose in this case. But I don't think it's fair to say that that's what Simmons dictates as a matter of law, given the facts in Simmons. Do you agree with that?
Your Honor,
I don't think a yes answer to Judge Diaz hurts you. It may not be the answer you prefer, but I don't think it hurts you.
Can I give a yes answer and explain?
Certainly. All I'm saying is, if you want us to go down that route, Simmons is not the vehicle. It doesn't really dictate the result in this case. Is that fair?
I mean, Simmons does not mandate.
But such a rule would be perfectly consistent with
that. But the rule would be consistent. And Simmons did make a distinction between that aggravated range of punishment and the presumptive range of punishment. And Simmons correctly would say that the aggravated range is a different offense. Presumptive range is a different offense. And what Carr would ask this court to do is extend the logic to this narrow range of cases and make Simmons perfectly logical that the mitigated range of punishment is also a specific distinct offense.
Would it really be a narrow range, though? Because you tell me where I'm off base here, if this is not your position. But it seems to me your position now is that even though the judge has the discretion with a specific defendant based on that defendant's criminal history and offense level, even though the judge by statute in North Carolina has the discretion to sentence them to a sentence in excess of 12 months, if they in fact impose a sentence in a range that does not exceed the 12 months, it is the fact of the actual sentence imposed that determines whether or not they're either sentenced under the Armed Career Criminal Guideline or whether they would in fact have been guilty as a felon for possessing a firearm.
Your Honor, that is not how Carr or the appellant would characterize the judge's discretion.
You tell us what the rule would be if we ruled in your favor in this case. Because it's not just going to apply to you, it apply to a lot of other people.
Well, it's just like footnote 9. It's very simple in terms where a crime is punishable under the act rather than 12 months. Look at the judgment. Look at the first page of the judgment. See the offense class, the prior record level, and the record of aggravation. And in this particular case,
so it would depend upon the level in which the judge chose to exercise his or her discretion to sentence.
That's correct. It's not a guideline system like prior level 4 from a minimum of 7 months to say well over 14. The minimum in the mitigated range is 7. The maximum in the presumptive, I know, is 14. I don't know what the maximum in the aggravated is. But the judge's discretion is not a guideline system. The judge's discretion is to determine the range of punishment. And the legislature just has, it's a mandated system. It's the determinant sentencing statute. It's not like the authority of a federal judge. It is so circumscribed that her authority is just determine the range. But once she determines the range, she has that discretion. But once
what would be the basis that, in view of your answers to Judge Diaz's question, that Simmons does not require that result? What would be the basis that you would give us for making that holding, that this is the new rule? What's the basis for that?
Your Honor, Norman Carr will contend that the statements in Simmons about the 18 offense levels, that would be dicta. That wasn't necessary. The court could have just said it's determined based on prior criminal record and offense class. But the court distinguished those 18 offense levels, and then it went to lengths to distinguish between the aggravated range and the presumptive range, and then this honorable court went on in Powell and in Miller to reaffirm that in addition to the offense class, prior record level, there's a third factor, and that's the aggravated range of punishment. And Carr does take aggravated range of punishment to mean the three ranges, not just the top range.
Okay. You've got some more time if you want to use it.
One more statement, a brief statement, just practical. The state judge gave Norman Carr a sentence with an 8-month minimum. A sentence in the presumptive range has a minimum sentence of 9 months. If he was convicted of an offense, the presumptive range, you know, what the judge could have chosen, but she didn't choose it. An 8-month sentence when authorized, and the sentence had...
I think the government concedes that he was actually sentenced in the mitigated range.
Oh, yes.
There's no dispute about that. The question is, what is the effect of the judge's decision on his... on the consequence, what are the consequences from that on the federal statute? Has he been convicted of a crime punishable by more than 1 year? And your argument is that he has not.
That's right.
Because the judge constrained her discretion by choosing to sentence in the mitigated range.
That's correct, Your Honor.
And to rule otherwise simply returns to HARP. Is that your argument? How, if we rule that the presumptive range, just because the judge has discretion to sentence in the presumptive range, even though the judge has exercised her discretion afforded by statute not to do that, how is that different from our prior precedent in HARP? Because in HARP, we said, well, judge could sentence as if the person is the most felonious at the highest aggravating level. And Simmons took all of that away. And so is that your argument, that basically
yes, Your Honor.
Consistent with Simmons is to look at what the judge actually does to this actual defendant? This judge didn't think this person was the kind of serious person who deserves 15 years in federal prison, based on the record that was presented to her. All of our cases talk about, not all of them, but many of our cases talk about what Congress was after under the Armed Career Criminal Act, what Congress was after in 922 G1, felon in possession. Well, this judge, this North Carolina judge, has told us as clearly as possible, this is not the person that Congress is interested in. The U.S. attorney may be interested in him, but Congress wasn't interested in this person because North Carolina law doesn't treat him as that kind of person. You've got some more time for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. Thank you.
Mr. Rand, we'd be glad to hear from you.
Good morning, May it please the court, Riffley Rand for the government.
What's the answer to Judge Davis's question? Is this a defendant that is barred from being treated as someone who in fact was eligible for a sentence of greater than a year?
The government would contend, based on North Carolina statutory law, North Carolina case law, and this court's decision in Simmons, that Mr. Kerr was eligible to be punished by more than a year for his...
Judge Davis says we're going back to HARP. Why is HARP different than this case?
HARP is different from this case because in HARP, this court looked at the absolute maximum sentence that any defendant could receive under North Carolina law to determine what the maximum punishment was.
Even if, in fact, that particular defendant could not receive that sentence.
That's
in that
correct.
Case.
In this case, Mr. Kerr, the government would contend, was eligible to receive a sentence of more than a year based on both the North Carolina statutes and the North Carolina case law interpreting those statutes. In creating the three different ranges of structured sentencing which is authorized under 15A 1340.17, the General Assembly did not create a wall between each of those ranges. It created a door on each of those ranges, pursuant to which the judge could move up or down in an exercise of his or her discretion. In 15A 1340.13e, the statute reads that the court may deviate from the presumptive range when a judge finds both aggravators and or mitigators and determines that the aggravated or mitigated range may apply. In 15A 1340.16b, the General Assembly said that the court may depart from the presumptive range if aggravators or mitigators apply and may impose a sentence in the mitigated range. And the case law in the Kane case and the Bivens case and the Norris case, the North Carolina courts have said that even when a judge finds that mitigators outweigh aggravators or aggravators outweigh mitigators either way, and finds that a mitigated range sentence is appropriate, that judge still has the discretion to sentence within the presumptive range irrespective of the findings.
No dispute about any of that. And here we have a judge who said this guy doesn't get more than 1 year.
That's correct.
And so the question, I think, is fairly straightforward. Is it consistent with Simmons to rule your way in favor of the government, or is it consistent with Simmons to rule in favor of the defendant here?
Well, we agree.
Because there's no question the judge has discretion. You just said it yourself. The judge can go to aggravated. The judge can remain in presumptive. The judge can go to mitigated. The judge can make mitigation findings and still go to presumptive. But here, on this defendant, given his record, a real judge with a real defendant in front of her said, this guy gets no more than 11 months. So which is more consistent with Simmons?
The government would contend that, consistent with Simmons and the North Carolina law, that the maximum punishment that Mr. Kerr could have received up until the time that the judge imposed the actual sentence was 14 months.
I'm not sure I know what you mean by up until the time the judge imposed the actual sentence.
The government disagrees with Mr. Crump that the exercise of discretion is complete once the judge chooses the sentencing range. Under the statutes, under 15A, the government would contend that the exercise of discretion is complete once the judge chooses the actual sentence, that in exercising his or her discretion, the judge doesn't just choose a range, the judge chooses an actual sentence. And at the right before the moment when the judge chooses the actual sentence, Mr. Kerr is eligible to receive a sentence from anywhere from 7 months at a minimum to 14 months at a maximum.
But if the judge says, I'm going to sentence from the mitigated range, and the upper end of that mitigated range does not allow for a sentence of greater than a year, then hasn't he then circumscribed his discretion and actually dictated what the appropriate range is going to be?
Well, in Simmons, at page 244, this court said, we do not rely on the Structured Sentencing Act to decrease the maximum term of imprisonment, but to establish the maximum term of imprisonment.
But I think that's what Judge Diaz just asked you. You say, and I understand the argument, you say, until the judge imposes a sentence, everybody's in the dark. In fact, you seem to be suggesting even the judge is in the dark until the judge pronounces a sentence. But in fact, the judge presumably will say, some judges, certainly many judges will say, I'm going to sentence in the mitigated range. Judge could say that on the record and thereby announce to the whole world, including the North Carolina legislature, I've now bound myself. So I'm not sure it's true that everybody's in the dark, including the judge, until the judge actually imposes a sentence. I think the judge knows full well what she's going to do when she makes the determination, as she did here, this defendant will be sentenced in the mitigated range. Now, whether the judge actually announced that on the record, of course, we don't know. We don't have a transcript, do we?
Not that I'm aware of.
Right. We don't have a transcript. But certainly, many judges in both state and federal court say things like that every day. And then they turn to counsel and they say, you know, in fact, in federal court, the judge is almost mandated to declare, as you well know, what the guidelines are before the judge entertains allocution from the parties. So I'm not sure it's persuasive to say the judge is in the dark about what the sentence is going to be, how she's going to exercise her discretion, until she actually selects a range.
Well, both the Kane and the Bivens case, in both of those cases and in numerous other cases that the government cited in the brief, the judges found that the mitigators outweigh the aggravators or the aggravators outweigh the mitigators.
Yeah, Bivens, the judge found one mitigator.
And
then the judge said, despite that, this guy belongs in the presumptive.
Correct. And so that That is consistent with North Carolina law, which says that the judge has the discretion, even when a judge finds that a mitigator outweighs any aggravators or vice versa, to sentence within the presumptive range or within any range that is available to the judge based on the judge's findings.
Well, under Simmons, is anything else necessary besides that?
The government would contend no, that under the three factors, I agree with Mr. Crump that under note 9 in Simmons, that the three factors are the offense level, the criminal record, and the availability of the aggravated range. The aggravated range is not at issue here, and so the maximum sentence that Mr. Kerr faced for the 2008 breaking or entering convictions was 14 months. The rule that Mr. Crump would have this court impose would be to tell the district judges to ignore North Carolina law, which is straightforward under 15A, about the discretion, and to focus on the actual sentence that was imposed by the state court judge.
The actual sentence or the sentence range? I mean, I don't think that he's gone that far. I think he's suggesting that if the upper end of the mitigated range for a particular defendant can in no situation result in a sentence of greater than a year, then that's the actual sentence range for that defendant, and the federal judge should consider that accordingly.
Well, some of the North Carolina ranges, the North Carolina ranges are concurrent sentences. So in the mitigated range, Mr. Kerr could have received a sentence of 9 to 11 months, or in the presumptive range, Mr. Kerr could have received a sentence of 9 to 11 months. So Mr. Crump is arguing, as I understand it, that a 9 to 11 month sentence in the mitigated range is somehow different from a 9 to 11 month sentence in the presumptive range when the judge had discretion to impose it under either range. Again, this is not a static system where the mitigated range is completely separate from the presumptive range, which is completely separate from the aggravated range. At the time,
I'm sorry to interrupt, but I thought the presumptive range here was 14.
That's what I thought.
The presumptive range at a maximum was 14.
Right. Right. So if he'd been sentenced at the presumptive range, we wouldn't be here.
That's correct.
So I'm not sure I understand what you just said.
What I believe Mr. Crump to be arguing.
You don't get a 9-month sentence in North Carolina, right, for anything. The sentence is from X to Y.
Correct.
And the difference here is between the mitigated range, where Y is less than 1 year, and the presumptive range, where Y is more than 1 year.
Correct.
And that's what drives the outcome of this case, right?
Correct.
And the judge chose the mitigated range.
Correct.
And so we're trying to figure out what is the legal effect on the defendant and his culpability under federal law of the judge's decision to circumscribe her discretion and treat Mr. Kerr in the mitigated range. Not the particular sentence she chose, but the range she chose for him, given his record, the offenses, and the mitigating factors.
Under 15A 1340.13 and 15A 1340.16, up until the time she chose the 8 to 10 month sentence, Judge Menifee could have imposed a sentence either in the mitigated range or in the presumptive range, even when she found that the mitigators outweighed any aggravators and that the sentence should come from the presumptive range. Up until the time she said 8 to 10, she had the discretion either to impose a sentence in the presumptive range or in the mitigated range.
She didn't say 8 to 10. She said the mitigated range applies in this case to this defendant.
And what the statutes say and what the case law says is even when the judge says that, the judge still has the discretion to impose a sentence in the presumptive range.
I don't read Blivens quite that strongly. The judge didn't say the mitigated range applies in this case. What the judge said in Blivens is there is one mitigating factor and no aggravating factor, and therefore the mitigated range is available to me, but I think the sentence should be in the presumptive range. That's what the judge said in Bivens.
Well, in Kane, the judge said, a mitigated range, the mitigators outweighed the aggravators, and that a mitigated range sentence was justified, and then sentenced in the presumptive range anyway.
Right.
And the Court of Appeals said that the law does not require a mitigated range sentence when a judge finds that the mitigators outweigh the aggravators, even if a mitigated range sentence is appropriate.
Well, appropriate, I think, is different from justified. Not to cut it too thinly. I think this record supports the conclusion that the judge said the mitigated range applies, that this defendant should be sentenced in the mitigated range. Not that it was justified, or not that the mitigated factors outweigh the aggravating factors, or that there are no aggravating factors. This judge seems to have clearly chosen the mitigated range.
That is what the record in this case shows.
Unequivocally.
In the findings, the determination of aggravators and mitigators, that is what this record shows. The government would contend, based on the North Carolina law under 15A and the Cain and the Bivens case, that the appropriate ranges of punishment that were eligible for Mr. Kerr to be sentenced gave him a maximum sentence of 14 months. And unless the court has any questions, the court would rest on the brief.
I think at one point you were about to talk about the problems that federal courts might face in dealing with a scenario where a state court judge found mitigating factors, as you have suggested, and nonetheless proceeded to impose a presumptive sentence. And I'm not sure that I follow that, because it seems to me that if we agree with Mr. Kerr's rationale, what we look at is the range of sentence, not the actual sentence, but the range of the sentence that a particular defendant was exposed to. Why would that be difficult for a judge to figure out? It's right there on the worksheet.
Well, in some cases, as some of the cases that the government cited in the brief, the state court judge found mitigating factors and found that the mitigating factors outweighed the aggravating factors and sentenced in the presumptive range anyway.
Right, so the federal judge would look at that presumptive range and decide whether or not in that particular case the upper end of that presumptive range was in excess of a year or so, then the conviction applies for sentencing purposes, for enhancement purposes. What's the problem?
Well, in cases like the Edmonds case and other cases where it was a 9 to 11 month sentence and a judge found mitigators, I can envision a set of circumstances where a lawyer says, well, this is actually a mitigated range sentence, even though it says presumptive range, because the judge found that mitigators outweighed aggravators, and that this wasn't...
Because it's not clear on the record, or what?
Well, even if it says that it's a presumptive range sentence, a 9 to 11 month sentence is the top of the mitigated range for sentencing purposes.
But why would we credit an argument that's clearly contradicted by the record?
Well, if there are mitigated sentences, or a mitigated sentence from the mitigated range where mitigating factors are found, I can envision a set of circumstances where a lawyer says this is actually a mitigated sentence because there were mitigating factors found.
I can envision all kinds of things. The question is whether or not that's reasonable.
Well, these are cases where presumptive range sentences were imposed that went to the state court. So, I mean, this is not a hypothetical situation. It has happened numerous times before.
Anything else?
Mr. Rand, this is somewhat off point, but I'm hoping you can help me out here. Does North Carolina have a felon disqualification provision?
I'm not sure that
on possession of firearms.
I'm not sure that I understand the terminology.
In other words, 922G says under federal law, if you're convicted, state or federal court, of an offense punishable by more than 1 year, you can't possess a firearm. That's what I mean by felon disqualification. Does North Carolina have an analogous state?
Like a firearm by felon state charge?
Yeah,
yes, sir.
Yeah. And I'm just curious, if a person sentenced in the mitigated range, as here, 8 to 10 months, how does the state law apply to that person?
It would apply to any felony under North Carolina law.
Well, the question is that a felony? if a person is sentenced at a mitigated range of 8 to 10 months, is that person disqualified, a prohibited person under state law?
Yes.
And what's the rationale for that?
That it's a felony under North Carolina law.
I see. So the definition of a felony under North Carolina law is not a sentence punishable by more than 1 year.
That's correct.
It's just a statutory term?
A statutory term.
Okay, I understand that. In Maryland, we have like 4 year felonies, or 4 year misdemeanors, I should say. But of course, under federal law, they would all be misdemeanors. They would all be felonies, because it's driven by the length of the potential sentence.
And the only misdemeanor under North Carolina law like that is driving while impaired, where you can
everything else is a felony
up to 2 months.
Everything else is a felony in North Carolina.
But any felony would count under that kind of.
Okay, and what is a felony in North Carolina is what the legislature says is a felony.
Correct.
I see. I'm not surprised.
Thank you, Mr. Rand.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Crump, you've got some time on rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. The case cited by the government, Mr. Rand, the Cain case, that case is a pre-act case. Other words, it precedes the Structure Sentencing Act. I think North Carolina at that time had the Fair Sentencing Act and had you had presumptive sentences, but you didn't have the structure sentencing. So it wouldn't carry the weight that Bivens would carry. Norman Carr asked this honorable court to extend its reasoning in Simmons between the aggravated and the presumptive ranges of punishment in his case to the mitigated range of punishment. Norman Kerr asked this court to defer to the state of North Carolina as to the seriousness of the offense, that the maximum of the mitigated range of punishment was the maximum sentence Norman Kerr could have received for his North Carolina convictions. Thank you.
Mr. Crump, we note that you are court appointed, and we want to thank you for agreeing to serve in that role, and we hope the Congress will enable us to pay you on a timely basis.
Well, it is a privilege to be up here.
We couldn't do our work if it weren't folks like you who agreed to serve on the court-appointed list.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. We will come down and greet